You're listening to SBS News.
Cost of Living Secrets, brought to you by Ricardo Gonçalves and Peggy Giacomelos for SBS News.
Ricardo, one of my favourite dishes in the world is a Greek dish called fava. It's made out of yellow split peas and it costs about 20 cents a serve, mega cheap.
Yeah, that is cheap. Sounds very nutritious as well. In my Portuguese culture, polenta is often seen as a budget-conscious meal. But I must admit, I've seen the way Mum made it as a kid, standing over this huge hot pot, constantly stirring, adding silver beet, potato, broad beans. It just felt very laborious, and while it tasted nice, I think that effort put me off it, even though it was budget conscious and healthy.
And with more on how to save money every day on nutrition, we're joined by dietitian and nutrition researcher Daisy Coyle. Welcome, Daisy.
Thank you. Lovely to be here.
Now, Daisy, let's get into specifics first. How can you shop in a more savvy way?
So I think when it comes to being a savvy shopper, there's two things you should be considering: where you're shopping and how you're shopping. In terms of where, the major supermarkets have weekly specials. It would be very silly, unless you don't have a choice, it'd be silly to go to the same supermarket week on week if there's another supermarket close by where you can maximise on those specials. There's also other supermarkets that sell things cheaper and in bulk, so I'd definitely be shopping around as much as possible. I personally love my local fruit and veg grocer. Not everyone has them in their area, but I love it because they don't only have quality fruit and vegetables. So you know what you're buying is going to be delicious. But I do find their weekly specials, and it's always the fruit and veg out the front. There's no question about what's the fruit and veg of the week. I find their prices are actually lower than the supermarkets. So I would shop there first and then go and do the supermarket shop to get all the things that, you know, you love your brands and you know love that routine of going to get the brands you know and love.
Speaking of supermarkets, I've noticed that a lot of the big brands have said that consumers are trading down in the cost of living crisis. So instead of buying an expensive cut of meat, for example, they might be buying mincemeat instead. Or instead of buying a steak, they're buying chicken. They're going to home brands instead of big name brands. What do consumers need to know about trading down when it comes to nutrition and value?
So a lot of the time trading down is okay nutritionally, particularly if you're switching to home brand private label products. People think they're not going to be as healthy, but they are just as healthy across multiple things like salt levels, sugar levels. Lots of research has come out to show that they're very, very similar. Sometimes even made by the same big company. So they're made in the same factories. They're just labeled as different things. So I'd really encourage people to switch up what they're buying. In terms of meat, I think nutritionally, you're going to be okay if you're switching within the same category. So if you're getting beef and getting other forms of beef, it's a little bit different if you're not buying beef anymore to always get chicken, because then you're missing out that source of red meat. But I feel like people are usually staying not changing up their diet too much. And one thing on that I'd recommend is when you're shopping, if you're shopping at a supermarket that has a deli, check out the deli prices before going to buy the pre-packaged meats. Often the prices are cheaper and you can also get exactly what you want rather than having to get 500 grams when you only want 400, for example.
Now, what about fresh and frozen food? I know myself, I love buying frozen vegetables. It's convenient for me. What's your advice in this area?
So I'm the same as you. I love frozen vegetables, love frozen fruit. The good thing is that they're very, very similar to fresh, sometimes even better, particularly when it comes to vitamin C levels. And that's because frozen fruit and veg is picked when it's really ripe and then frozen when it's really ripe. It's usually frozen within at least a day. So it's all done at that peak ripe period. So you're getting nutrient levels when they're at their highest, vitamins and nutrients at their highest, compared to if you're at the supermarket and you might pick up, you think it's a ripe mango, but actually it's not really there yet. Love frozen vegetables. I use them all the time in stir fries, and frozen fruit is my favourite in smoothies. It makes them really thick compared to, while it's cheaper, right,
frozen foods, is there a different way to cook them? Because I find if I'm going to chuck some frozen broccoli into the air fryer, it comes out differently than to when I'm cooking it when it's fresh.
Yeah, I think if you're going to be having it as a side, it's not as good. I agree with you. I don't like it as much. So I use it in things where there's going to be a lot of sauces. So something in it, like a stir fry where it's just all together. I also love putting, like, say, you know, corn kernels in things like corn fritters. To me, it's using frozen corn's perfect for that because you're not just eating corn in itself. It's mixed in with flour and eggs and everything. So I think, and same with frozen fruit. To eat frozen fruit, you need to zap it in the microwave. Mm. It goes a bit soggy. I personally love that. I love that over my muesli and yogurt, but it puts people off because the texture is not the same.
And when it comes to nutritional value, right, you've spoken about frozen foods. What about canned foods? Is that the same? Because I note that a lot of the fruits have got syrups in them, right?
Yes. So canned fruits and canned vegetables, you do need to be careful because particularly the fruits, they can be canned in syrup. So even when you're draining the syrup, the fruit, if it's, say, peaches, tin peaches, they've been soaking up those juices. So even if you drain it all, it's still in there. So it's going to be more sugary than if you were to have a peach on its own. When it comes to canned vegetables, I'd look out for salt levels because often they're sitting in a brine. If you're draining the vegetables, washing them before you're using them, say tinned beans or tin legumes, then you can remove some of those salt levels. But definitely when it comes to that, I'd be comparing brands, and the Health Star rating can be really helpful for that because it gives an overall score of the healthiness of the food.
And when you say Health Star rating, what exactly do you mean?
Yeah, so the Health Star rating is a label that companies can put on products. It's voluntary, so you don't see it on all foods. And it's a score from 0.5 to 5 stars, 5 stars being the healthier. And it's an overall rating of the healthiness of a food. So it takes into account the salt levels, the sugar levels, the protein content, and things like fruit and legume content and fiber. So it's a really good way to take the confusion out of shopping. Simply look at the Health Star rating and pick the one with a higher star.
So, Daisy, what about organic food? I mean, it's obviously more expensive, especially for fresh food. Are there things we can compromise on there?
Yeah, I think organic's a tricky area. When it comes to budget, I wouldn't prioritise choosing organic over non-organic. And I think for most people, with organic foods, there's can be a lack of regulation around what is organic versus not organic. So it is a very confusing area. And a lot of products on the market, a lot of fruit and veg on the market that are not organic, they're not harmful to health just because they're not organic. So I wouldn't be encouraging people to shop organic, particularly if they're finding money's really tight.
Fair enough. And in terms of other tips to maintain health on a budget, what would you say there?
So I think the one that comes up all the time, and I'm going to say it again because I think it's so important, is to plan. And not just plan dinner meals, which is where people usually get to. Great start. And I don't want to make people feel bad for planning out their dinners, but not just dinner. Think about what will I have for lunches? Is it going to be leftovers? Will I do sandwiches this week? What about snacks? You know, thinking about all the things you might want to eat, because you can focus on dinner and it's going to get to 3 p.m. and you'll be going, particularly if you're at work, you think, what am I going to eat? I've brought nothing with me. I also love when planning for the week to go through fridge, freezer, pantry and look what you have. And if you're listening to this now, do it. Have a look. When I actually look at what's in my fridge, I'm shocked. I look at it every day and I'm still surprised. Half-eaten jars of curry paste, leftover pesto. Found a bag of pasta in my pantry last night when I was looking for something. 3 bags of rice. I made a risotto once, didn't finish off the bag. So when you're thinking of what to make for the week, look at what you already have and take it as a bit of a challenge. Treat it as, you know, what if I was going on holidays? What if I was moving out? I want to get through all this stuff. And that is the ideal world. You buy what you need for the week or buy what you need every 3 days or however often you go to the shops, and you're getting through it and then you're starting again. That's where, in terms of waste, that's where we should all be at.
Speaking of waste and making the most of what you've got, I often get paranoid when I see a use-by or a best-before date on products, whether it be milk or if it's, you know, spices, for example. If it's a couple of months over, like, I don't want to touch it. What's your advice when it comes to looking at things that's best-before and use-by date?
So use-by is a bit more serious. You want to use it by that date, and it's usually on things like milk, because there is a point where it will go over that time and it's going to spoil. It's no longer going to be healthy to eat. You will know, though, if your milk's off. So you can still use it as a guide, but there are some groups in the population that shouldn't play around with that. Mm. If you're pregnant, if you have chronic diseases, if you have taking drugs that affect your immune response. Just some people don't play around with that. Just throw it out when it says it's done. Best before, though, is a bit like it's best before. Like, it would be best before this date, and that's probably what you'll see in your spices. I don't think I've looked at the date on my spices. I just use them until they're done. I should probably do that. But it's really about picking and choosing the ones that you care about, and the use by versus best before is a good guide.
I look at it all the time because I'm always worried about getting sick with whatever I eat.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good way to be.
What about meat? So often you can go to the supermarket, for example, and there'll be half-price meat. I stick it in the freezer and might cook it up a month later. Is that good or bad?
That's good. That's really smart. And that's the beauty of those deals and the beauty of having a freezer. At the end of the day, there's specials on bread often, meat. As long as you're bringing it home, putting it in the freezer straight away, it basically stops time until you bring it out. As long as you're not keeping it in the freezer for a year or so, then the meat can be affected. But you're going to be eating it soon.
I hope this isn't a basic question. But again, one of my fears is you freeze something and then not knowing how to defrost it correctly.
Mm.
When it comes to meats, how do you do it?
Yeah, when it comes to meat, there is a danger zone with food. So you don't want to be leaving things out on the counter for too long once it's getting to sort of those room temperatures. I would defrost in the fridge unless you're home and you can see something defrosting. So if it's a warm day at home and you've got a steak in the freezer, leaving it out on the bench is fine if you're home and you can sort of check on it, but you don't want that sitting there once it's defrosted because it's going to get too warm and then microbes can start to grow. So I would be keeping it in the fridge if you're not home, on the counter if you are. And then there's certain things that you can just cook from frozen. So air fryers now do a pretty good job of handling a frozen fish, for example. So you don't need to always thaw something. Same with bread. You can put frozen bread in the toaster. It comes out beautifully. So I think knowing things you need to defrost, because there is, that's that danger period when you start to thaw and defrost.
Now, with people leading such busy lives, takeaway is obviously an easy option. I mean, you know, I probably get takeaway once a week. How often do you get takeaway, Ricardo?
Not often. Never. Never.
Really?
Of course I do.
Okay. You know, we want to support the economy and small businesses, of course, but obviously it's expensive. What's your advice when it comes to takeaway?
Yeah, I also love takeaway. When it comes to budgeting, it can feel sometimes that takeaway is a relatively cheap option, particularly if you're buying it for one. You're like, oh, $15, $20, that's not too bad. But if you have $15, $20 and you took that to a supermarket, you could make a meal for four people. So I think important that for people who are struggling to afford food is that they're thinking about how much they're eating out, how much they're having takeaway, and pulling that back a bit if they're eating out regularly. And that's where something like upskilling their cooking skills can be really important. Mm. Then when it comes to getting takeaway, I love the idea of getting takeaway that is super tasty to you and you can't replicate at home. It's going to save you from making these mediocre dishes, plus you're not going to have all these sauces that you never use again. And I'd be avoiding takeaway that has a lot of deep fried components and choosing options where there's a lot of veg and a lot of variety too.
Okay.
You made a good point. Can we talk about now the best way to plan meals for different people? And if we talk about single people or people living alone, whether they're younger or older, because there's this perception sometimes that it's more expensive to cook for one person than it is for a whole family. They may go get that takeaway food instead. What's the best way to maximise your buck when you're single and trying to eat nutritiously and on a budget?
Talking with clients who are single, you hear time and time again how hard they find it. The cooking, the cleaning, it takes a lot longer than it does to actually cook to eat the meal. So I can really appreciate that every single night you don't want to come home and think, what am I going to eat that's enough to eat just in that meal? I do recommend for people who live alone to still meal prep, but not excessively. You don't want to be meal prepping, making, say, a lasagna that's going to serve eight people, and then you've got to eat that over four lunches and four dinners. So meal prepping occasionally, once or twice a week, a dish that can serve you over three or four dishes. And then during those other nights in the week, like that might cover you for maybe four nights. And then those other nights, doing things that are really easy that don't cost much. Things like a homemade burger. You could have bread rolls in the freezer, meat patty, chop up some tomato, beetroot, cucumber. It's, you know, homemade burgers are always yummy. And then everything else you can put away and then pull out again. Single serve soups from the supermarket, maybe a ready meal occasionally. But I'd also encourage people who live alone, who have friends and family around, to be encouraging one night a week where they can have dinner with somebody else or with a group of people. A lot of my friends do that, sort of friends who are living alone in their 30s. They do dinner with friends. It might be four or five of them. Then they're only having to cook for everyone one time, you know, every 5 weeks, and then other times they get to cook for other people or doing something where they all bring a plate to someone's house. So I think if you are living alone and struggling with that, I do encourage you to reach out to friends and try and get a new routine.
And people with young children, we know that people have longer commutes, you know, rising mortgages, expensive rents, the rest of it. That would be a real struggle, feeding kids through the lifespan, whether younger or older children. What kind of tips would you offer families in that situation?
So I think there's parents with really young kids have different issues with parents with older kids. Parents with young kids or a parent with young kids, it can be a really hard time in terms of, as you said, budget, but also having time to cook dinner and then the timing of dinner. Little kids, they might eat at 5:30. Both parents or one parent might not be home yet. And so a lot of young families do an early dinner with the kids, or the kids eat early and then they eat after. I don't think it's necessary, unless you're all eating together, I don't think it's the time to be putting pressure on yourself to have a family meal, particularly when kids, when they're very young, they have a different diet. They can't have as much salt. They don't like, you know, those exotic flavours as much necessarily. So I would encourage young families to prep, but prep components of the meal so it's all ready to go. Steam all your veg, have that in the freezer, pre-cook boiled eggs, chicken, have that ready to go, even chopping up fruit. Mm. So if you are putting together a quick plate for your kids, you're just throwing everything on there for them. And then if you are having a dinner all together one night during the week, you might be having that a little bit later than usual. Your kids are going to start pestering you, and you've got some things in the freezer ready to pull out to keep them going until then.
And I guess you can eat the steamed veg yourself too, right?
You can also eat it.
Yeah. How long can you keep steamed veg in the fridge once you've cooked it?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I reckon something like broccoli would go a bit sort of a bit funny after a few days. Yeah.
You know what's interesting with the kids thing? I'm an uncle to three young kids, and I appreciate how expensive it can be to feed a family. What I've learned is when I take out the kids is that I generally don't order for myself, because the kids never finish their meals. So you're the one picking up the rest of the meal, so you don't spend too much money.
Yeah, yeah, I hear that all the time. Mm. Like, what did you have for breakfast? Talking to new mums, what did you have for breakfast? Ends of, you know, bits of toast, half an egg, bit of scrambled egg on the side. Yeah, they're just eating up all the leftovers. It's a good budget-saving tip.
What about teenagers?
Yeah, parents with teenagers, a lot of the time they're finding it hard to feed their kids. Kids are hungry all the time. They need so much food. Carbs are your friend in this situation. It is not the time to be in the headspace of a single-person meal. Mm. Yeah, you know, salmon and some veggies. No, no, no. You want to be thinking about, what can I make with rice? You know, curries. You know, you could be doing passas and pasta bake, Slovakia wraps, burritos, anything that has a carb. Even if it's pasta at dinner time, you can be serving that with some bread. And I'd be thinking all my recipes around that idea of making it not just carbs, but making carbs a really big component. And I would also be encouraging parents to meal prep as much as they can. So it might be when they're making, on a Sunday night, they're making their dinner for Sunday night, also making a dish for Monday, or getting kids in the kitchen. I know some families that order meal kits. So a box arrives at their door each week. They've already pre-selected all the meals, so teenagers can pick what they want to cook. There's recipes and all the food that they need to cook those recipes, and they get their kids in the kitchen to make them as a part of one of their chores for the week. And kids usually seem to enjoy it. And then it gives, you know, parents a free ride that night.
What's your advice for those really struggling that don't have as much disposable income, even for the necessities to go out shopping at the supermarket, whether they be retired on a pension, whether they be in between jobs and really are struggling just to put food on the table?
Yeah, it's really hard. And I think of all those people who are struggling. It'd be a very, very tricky situation. As you said before, Peggy, going to the supermarket and looking at where there's meat and bread that are discounted, taking those home, either cooking them up straight away or putting them in the freezer. For those people who might be out of work or retired, they have time on their side and they might be not able to get out and about as much, but I would be using that time to shop around, getting to know in your area where the good deals are, getting to know what, if it's a supermarket retailer or a small business, whether they do discounts at certain times of the day, and even having a chat to neighbours to see what's available. I know near me there's a church that has a food pantry out the front and it's always stocked up. It gets stocked up daily by some lovely volunteers in the area. And you might not know what's available, but you might have people around you that have heard of different things.
And we're also busy, obviously, with work, all kinds of things. In terms of basic cooking skills for people that may have not picked those up in childhood or as adolescents and so on, where can they pick up some basic cooking skills to help them save money as well?
Yeah, I think YouTube's great. YouTube has everything from how to cook an egg, how to make a lasagna, all the various forms, and it's all, you can follow it by video. You don't need to follow a list of instructions. TikTok and Instagram, they're full of recipes now. I think if you've got someone in your home, you know, whether it's a teenager who's going, Mom, Dad, there's this recipe, I would actually be really, I would be encouraging that to say, let me have a look at it, let's make it at home, because it's getting kids wanting to cook, so I wouldn't sort of put them off that. I also have some recommendations for a website where there's healthy, budget-friendly recipes available. So Dietitians Australia has a very long list of recipes and they're all uploaded by dietitians. So very dietitian friendly. There's also a website called No Money, No Time, dedicated towards people that have no money and little budget to cook. And there's recipes on there that are targeted towards university students, but also retirees and people who are out of work. And CSIRO Total Wellbeing Diet also has a long list of really healthy recipes. I had a look through there yesterday and lots of things. I was like, oh, I might have that, give that a go.
Yeah, I get a lot of my recipes from TikTok and Instagram. And what I do is I create a little folder, a little collection. So whenever I see a recipe that I like, I just put that in there. So I've got a whole list digitally to refer to. Can we end by talking about what your go-to cheap, healthy meal is? For me, the thing I buy every time I go to the supermarket, some eggs, and then I look at what's on special in terms of veggies, and it'll usually be either a couple of zucchinis or a carrot because I know I can always make an omelette.
Yeah, love omelettes. That's a good one. I do frittatas a lot because I always have leftover roast veg. I do a big batch of roast veg and it's always leftover. Yeah. I reckon my budget meal, which sounds like it's not a budget meal, but let me tell you it is, fried rice. Boil the rice and then in the freezer mix peas, corn, carrot, couple of eggs. I don't add any bacon in, so that's out. And I just add, you know, hoisin sauce, soy sauce, some other sauces, and it makes a huge amount that lasts me for days. It would be only a couple of dollars per serve.
Do you know what's trending on social media at the moment is how long rice can stay safe for in the fridge?
Yes.
So now that you've brought that up, you make that fried rice, how long can you keep it for?
Oh, I would only keep it in there for a couple of days. Bacillus cereus is the bacteria that sits in rice. It's quite disgusting.
What does it do to you?
I think it's just the typical food poisoning things. Yeah. But yeah, definitely don't keep rice in the fridge for too long. Also, if you're getting rice as a part of takeaway, don't leave it on the table. If you're eating Thai food where there's multiple dishes, don't leave that sitting for hours and then put it away. You want to put the rice away pretty early because it's arrived hot and then it's going to cool down. You don't want it to be sitting in this zone of like mildly warm where those bacteria love to grow.
Thanks for that, Daisy. That wraps up this edition of the podcast. Daisy Coyle, nutritionist and researcher. And remember to subscribe for more as we explore how to save money every day from supermarkets to good health and more.
Thanks, Daisy.
Thanks for having me.